Hi, my name's Charlotte and I'm an addict. And nervous, of course. And I've got a cold. But I am extremely grateful to be clean and extremely grateful to be alive. And I heard somebody say that in a chair about a year ago, and I was in a really bad space, and I got to this meeting and heard this man say it, and I believed it, and it was exactly what I needed to hear. And I was, whenever I do a chair, I'm not quite sure what's going to come out. So what I tend to do is, shout out to the universe, little silent shout, that something I say will help somebody in this room. Maybe not even today, but maybe something I say, as has happened to me, will be remembered in time, or might click in, or something, because that's how it has worked. And as I was standing outside the meeting, I remembered this saying that popped into my head as I was standing outside, and it was so perfect, I thought. And it's an old Sufi saying that when all the roads ahead seem to be closed, he will show you a secret way. And it was, and I was thinking, I don't know why it came into my mind, but for me that has described exactly what happened, because my my drugs of choice at the end were crack and heroin, and my using at the end, I was street homeless and insane, and I had lost everything that was that I cared about. I had lost my husband, I had lost my children, I had lost the roof over my head. I had, because I'm alcoholic, I hadn't drunk for 3 years, but I had decided in my wisdom that to use crack and heroin was a manageable way to go forward. And then at the end, when I completely lost the plot, I picked up alcohol again. So for me, in the readings, when it talks about alcohol is a drug, for me, that is just undeniable. You know, all of it is a drug. And this disease, the reason I love NA so much is because it covers everything. It covers behavior, it covers the drugs, it covers the lot. And in recovery, it has been about learning to find a new way of life and to manage my illness. And for me, it has been, I am a great one for the steps. And I completed my step 12 about 3 months ago. And it, you know, I will do them again. It has been it's a fabulous, fantastic system and process for me of coming to faith, of learning to live my life, of treating myself and others with a bit of dignity and respect. And I haven't picked up alcohol or drugs for over 3 years. And I used since the age of 15. I'm 41, and I used since the age of about 15. And that is astonishing. I did so many rehabs and so many detoxes, and so much counselling, and I had all the awareness and no solution. And the solution has been within this fellowship, and it has been living my life as best I can within the principles of this fellowship. And at the moment, part of the reason I think I'm quite flu is I'm going through a big internal process of letting go of a relationship that has been damaging to me with the man I used with and brought into recovery. And it has been a huge learning curve, because I left that one back door open, and it has been nothing but pain. And hopefully, pray to God, that, you know, this internal process, and it is about taking action, a lot of it, that I have been unwilling to take. And it has bitten me in the ass at every turn. And there are no shortcuts. And that is what I've learned. Although I haven't picked up, there have been times I have lived in unnecessary pain. And the times I am at my best, again, it's somebody I saw here tonight, I haven't seen for a long time, and I was thinking about him today, and he said something that really struck me, and this was right at the beginning for me. He said, when I do service, I'm the best version of myself. And it was such a great thing to say, because when I do service in the fellowship, or to the people I love, and when I'm helping, and when I'm doing something, I am the best version of myself, because I'm not in myself. And this whole thing has just been a package. And I don't know, you know, it's a great long learning curve. And I was a feisty little girl. When I was in rehab, and they kept saying, you know, about dysfunctional families and blah, blah, blah. And I didn't tick all the boxes by any means. My parents loved each other very much. I'm the youngest of four kids. I displayed a lot of the isms throughout my childhood. And it was a kind of family story that when I was about four, my parents took me to see Dick Whittington, the pantomime, and there's a bit where Dick Whittington is fighting the King Rat, and they looked down and I was missing from my seat because I was down in the orchestra pit trying to get up to save Dick Whittington. And it kind of summed it up, because it was this huge kind of lust for life, this lack of fear, this really lovely stuff, but it somehow, all of that turned on itself, and I began to self-destruct. And I think there was a great sort of family tragedy that when I was about 14, my father was diagnosed, well, you know, he started displaying symptoms of Alzheimer's, and he died 7 years ago. And our family fell to bits, really, and he was the most beautiful man inside and out, very spiritual without making a big deal of it, but just this gorgeous man. And we sort of fell to bits, and I started running then. And I didn't stop. And where this illness is so fear-based, and when I have brought, through defects of character, through denial, through all sorts of things, fear into recovery, it's where I have found it most difficult. And so I have this kind of thing, again, I heard ages ago, this thing, you know, to replace fear with faith. And for me, the whole point of my... the thing I strive for most in recovery is to deepen my faith. And I choose to use the word God, because it covers the lot for me. But, you know, I have ultimate respect. Everybody's God is their own God. Everybody's higher power is their own higher power. And how it is coming to... For me, it's been coming to faith, to something that is not me, that is bigger than me, that is benign, that has... That there is some plan. I mean, I shouldn't, by rights, be sitting here. The statistics of... just how my life was at the end. I was street homeless for about 4 months, and I was in last, you know, certainly by the fourth month, I was in the last stages of alcoholism. I could barely walk. I was trying to find crack and heroin where I could. I was in extremely high-risk situations. I was insane, so I didn't really care. And I was dying. So to be sitting here 3 years down the line, clean and sober, is phenomenal. And I got stuck into the fellowship quite early on. Everything, the thing was, again, coming here, I was thinking, I ran on masks. I worked in an industry that is very based on image and a very easy place to hide. And I got very good at it. And I was thinking, the thing about masks is I got so good at them that I started to believe that they were me. So by the end, I had no idea who I was. And as a child, I had quite a strong sense of identity. And by the end... of a vicious, active addiction within a violent relationship with another addict, I had completely lost any idea of who I was, and all I had left was shame and fear and masks. And I had I married young to I married a man who I hold in the highest esteem and love and respect for the rest of my days, and. He has kept our kids safe, and I've now kind of rejoined the gang, and I'm there to keep them safe too. And they are 11 and 13, and I was saying earlier to this gentleman that they are not bewildered anymore. They were very small when I collapsed. It was about 2001 that my father died, and that was when my ex-husband very graciously says, you know, he thinks I had a nervous breakdown. I think it was the build-up of my illness that crashed when my father died, and I started drinking then and I couldn't stop. And I had, for years before that, been trying to control my illness, and there had been suicide attempts and horror. And I married young, hoping this would save me, and for a while I was reasonably safe, but it was a build-up of this horror, and it crashed. And I started going insane and behaving, and I was just lost, and went into my first rehab then, hooked up a little while later with a man who was a crack addict, and as I say, stopped drinking and just started taking hard drugs. And the fear, the great grief and the shame of my active addiction was around my children, and it was the profound sadness. And somebody said to me once, I could have decked him, you know, I'm sure when you were using, you just probably just wanted to jog your kids on and you couldn't have cared less and blah blah blah. And it wasn't the truth of it. I was desperately unhappy and trying to kind of keep my head above water and do the right thing, and I was powerless. I could not stop using, end of story. And it got so dark, And I'm happy to report these days, 3 years, even only 3 years, which is a huge amount of time and a tiny amount of time if I consider I wish to be doing this for the rest of my life. They are happy and confident and strong and loving and proud of me and proud of NA. And they, to my husband's credit, he never, ex-husband's credit, he never kept from them. He did it in the most gentle and honest way he could, but he didn't keep from them what was happening. Thank you. And so they have been kept abreast of the situation, and they're great, and they have huge love for this fellowship, as I do. And there is, it is, it has been in service, it's been in sponsorship, and it has been through my sponsors this beautiful learning curve, learning about my addiction and learning about myself, and it has been gentle. All of it has been gentle, and I have been allowed to be myself in this and to find a voice which I had lost completely. And it has been through sponsoring other people. You know, I had lost all, I had used to have good friendships with women in my life, and I had lost those, and they've come back through the close and honest relationships I've had with two sponsees. And it's just, this whole thing is beautiful, and it's a package. And to anyone new, please keep coming back, because it's kept me clean for 3 years. And I'll leave it at that. Thank you, guys.